This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shah on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Berkey Tuesdays, our managing editor over at VSIN and VSIN.com. On a Tuesday, hour three, Adam Burke joins us, skating tripods. You get the VSIN Daily Baseball Bets Podcast, VSIN College Football Betting Podcast with Tim Murray on Tuesdays as well. You got the look ahead from Mr. Burke as far as week three early lines and thoughts. We'll get to those in the NFL. We'll get to the college football preview as well as we welcome you back. Amal Shah, Dustin Sweetelson, I'm Patrick Maher, and we say, what's up, Berkey? How you doing, Adam? Nice to see you.
I'm good. Good to be back. Good to see you too, Patrick. It's been a couple of weeks since I've seen you.
Thank you, buddy. It's nice to be back. I appreciate that. Let's back up, and then we'll move forward. We split on the total last night, so one game goes over, one under, but big-time overs cash in week two. We'll put that aside and just talk about the games first, okay? We'll start with defense coming through for Pittsburgh, obviously an outright winner as a two-point dog against Cleveland, your Browns. What did you take away from that matchup?
Well, I took away sadness and despair, to be totally honest with you, because the Nick Chubb injury is just such a huge issue for the Browns going forward. And Jerome Ford had a couple of bright spots in that game, including that long run. But, you know, I mean, the way that Deshaun Watson is playing, the way that this offense looks, the way this offensive line looked last night, you know, they really need Nick Chubb to be that guy, and now he won't be. So we'll see what happens with Cleveland going forward. But, again, the biggest takeaway for me last night is that T.J. Watt is completely unblockable. I mean, there's just nothing you can do with that guy, and he covers up what I think are a lot of deficiencies for that Pittsburgh defense. I thought their coverage was not particularly good. It was Watt and Highsmith who made all the plays for them, and that wound up being enough.
When you look at Deshaun Watson, does he have the ability to kind of get back to where he was in Houston? Patrick and I were talking earlier about his inability to escape the pressure, where in the past he would have been able to elude it, get the ball down the field, or take off running himself. Can he regain that?
You know what? He looks slow. He looks really indecisive. There were some guys open down the field. I mean, Pittsburgh's coverage was really soft, especially along the sidelines. And Watson just wasn't seeing it, wasn't making the throws, was, you know, as the pocket kind of collapsed around him, he got a little bit jumpy, took off and went. You know, I think it's really difficult because Deshaun Watson's not really intended to be a pocket passer, but that's what he's kind of forced to do with the composition of this team. Even though Kevin Stefanski redid the playbook for him, you know, it's still not been a good look here through the first two games, and I don't want to call it a sunken cost at this point, but this guy has shown no signs of being able to be even a league average quarterback, let alone the top 10 caliber guy he was, you know, before the long-term suspension.
In the application of, and I totally agree, it feels like Watson, Berkey, a little bit running in mud. He just doesn't look like he has the same quick twitch. But the Chubb absence moving forward for the Browns, and we can discuss next up for the Browns, they host the Titans. I think that number's down to 3, which we can have a discussion on a larger scale. But just the impact. I mean, this is a guy that rushed during his career for 5.3 yards per carry. Just was, what, 10 for 64 last night early in the second before the gruesome injury. I mean, he matters as much at the running back position to the Browns as anybody.
Yeah, he absolutely does. I mean, I kind of would have expected a bigger adjustment in this line, to be totally honest with you. I realize that, you know, outside of the elitist of the elite position, you know, skill position guys, you don't get a whole lot of line movement. But Nick Chubb is that guy to me. I mean, Nick Chubb is probably a point and a half adjustment to the number for me, especially because Cleveland wants to achieve balance because they have to with where Deshaun Watson is right now. And now it's going to be much harder for them to achieve that balance. So I think it's a really significant injury for them. That being said, I'm not impressed with Tennessee at all. I really don't think Tennessee is going to have a great amount of success running the football against Cleveland. And say what you will about this offense, and there's a lot to say about it, this defense is phenomenal. They are flying to the ball. Grant Delpit looks like a completely different player. Everybody in the secondary basically looks different this season, and they still have a pretty good front four. You know, I think defensively they're going to stay in a lot of ball games, but the problem is, can you really rely on Watson to get that big third and eight completion? Can you rely on him to make the right decision in the red zone? I don't know. At this point, I mean, despite, you know, the 26-22 game yesterday that did go over the total, Cleveland looks like a stone-cold under team going forward.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. I like that assessment on Browns in terms of the total. I want to ask you specifically, when you look at this Miami Dolphins team, they've got Denver on deck this week. They're 6.5-point favorite. Have you seen enough from this Miami team offensively in New England and, of course, the great performance they had against the Chargers to make you a firm believer in them to be the favorites in the AFC East?
Favorite? I'm not so sure. I mean, I don't want to discredit Buffalo at this point in time. But also, I was very high on Miami coming into the season. I think Mike McDaniel's a really brilliant head coach, and we've seen that through the first two games. He knew he could throw the ball all over the Chargers, so he did. Then you see the big Raheem Mostert game in week two against New England. So he's very capable of adjusting on the fly and really putting his team in the best position to succeed from a matchup standpoint. And that's really all you can ask in today's NFL. And they've got a very good chance to move to 3-0. You mentioned the line in that game against Denver, and Denver has all sorts of issues at this point in time. So I've been very impressed with Miami. Is the defense good enough? I think that's a question as we go forward. But offensively, as long as Tua stays upright, you know, if they're going to have any semblance of a running game, this is a very dynamic and very dangerous offensive team.
I just quickly want to, because we got the Browns, I want to, Adam Burke, VSiN Magazine editor at the desk there with the boys at the D, I want to circle back to Pittsburgh and get your take. So, of course, Pittsburgh's in Vegas right next to you guys where you're sitting Sunday night. But let's discuss the team. A winner last night, Berkey. It's not repeatable to get two defensive touchdowns. You add in Cleveland's four turnovers. I mean, it was an offense. Obviously, Matt Canada's getting crushed. But just overall moving forward with the Steelers, where are you? You know, where are you on Pickett? I'd love to get your take.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think George Pickens is a phenomenal player. I think George Pickens has very little help in this offense. You know, I mean, Deontay Johnson being on the IR does not help them at all whatsoever. If they're going to keep giving the ball to Najee Harris, they're just going to keep shooting themselves in the foot. And Jaylen Warren is too small to be an every down back. And, you know, we saw him, you know, miss some assignments in terms of blitz pickup and pass rushers in last night's game. I think Pittsburgh has a lot of issues offensively, and they're not just Matt Canada issues. I think there's still questions about whether or not Kenny Pickett is a legit, you know, league average or better NFL starting quarterback. Pickens is a matchup nightmare, but beyond that, I mean, Freiermuth was barely even noticeable yesterday. You know, they just don't have enough guys that can create big explosive plays for them. It'll have to be on the defense, and I think outside of Watt, Highsmith, you know, maybe Micah Fitzpatrick, if, you know, he's able to come back quickly from whatever that injury was that he suffered last night, they've got, you know, kind of a stars and scrubs unit on defense. I know we all joke about it. We've talked about it a million times on this show. Mike Tomlin's never had a losing season. I think the Steelers will have a losing season this year. I really, truly believe that.
I don't think you're too far off based on the performance we've seen so far. Kansas City Chiefs have scored 37 points in two games. There's probably not too many other teams in the National Football League we'd ask that question about. Is there a reason to be concerned in terms of the offensive performance we've seen out of this team in the first 2 weeks?
Well, I mean, look, you know, obviously in week one, they don't have Travis Kelce, right? And Travis Kelce is a top five wide receiver in the NFL. And I know he plays tight end, but he's a top five wide receiver in the NFL. So, you know, he comes back, and against the Jags, they didn't look super explosive. They wound up having some issues of their own. And certainly there are questions, you know, did Eric Bieniemy have more to do with that offense than we originally thought? That's certainly a possibility. I think there are reasons to be concerned about the Chiefs just because, you know, we kind of saw this with Sean McVay and all the innovative concepts and things that he was doing at the NFL level. People eventually caught up. And I think with Andy Reid, people are eventually going to catch up. And that may be exactly what's happening now. So I think there are, you know, reasons to be legitimately concerned, especially because, I mean, Detroit didn't play all that well against Seattle defensively. So I think there are definitely reasons to be concerned. Maybe not this week against the Chicago Bears, but let's see what the Chiefs do in that game against the Jets on October 1st when they face a really legitimately good defense. Let's see if those problems continue to exist.
Okay, back to Monday night, Adam. So the Saints, they beat a Titans team you just mentioned you're not overly impressed by. They beat a Carolina team. We'll get your take on Carolina. My assumption is not overly impressed. Short week, they go to Lambeau. That number's creeping down a little bit. Green Bay open 2.5, maybe 3 at a shop. And now we're seeing 1.5, 2. New Orleans catching 1.5, 2 at Green Bay. Your take on the Saints overall and that matchup in Green Bay?
Well, I think the question for the Saints is, I mean, what's left in the tank for Derek Carr? And is this just going to a different team, learning a new playbook, learning to play with different personnel? Because, I mean, obviously he was here with the Raiders for such a long period of time that he had developed a rapport with pretty much everybody, even as they had coaches coming in and out, stuff like that. At this point in time, I mean, he just doesn't look comfortable with the Saints. And they've had a couple of big throws. They've had a couple of explosive plays that have kind of saved them in some games here so far. But Carr just consistently doesn't look comfortable with this team. Last night, I mean, Taysom Hill far and away your leading rusher. That's probably not the greatest recipe for success. I think the Saints are still very talented defensively, but I've got great concerns about this offense going forward. And honestly, of the plays that we see here so far, I don't really get why this line is coming down in this Packers game. I do like Green Bay here this week.
Been impressed by this team defensively, the offensively minus Jordan Love. Where do you come out on Green Bay?
Well, look, I mean, I think for Green Bay, the data set is, you know, not fully available because they've had injuries at the wide receiver position for the first 2 weeks of the season. And, you know, I know that we can kind of talk about the merits of the preseason and how much that matters, but, you know, Jordan Love and the first team offense looked really good for Green Bay in the exhibition games, and now they've had the issues with Christian Watson being banged up and some other guys, and, you know, Bakhtiari not playing on in this past game. So I think there are, you know, legitimate reasons to be optimistic about the Packers, who haven't full strength yet offensively, and I think have done some really good things to this point in the season.
Speaking of optimism, looks like Kareem Hunt is visiting your Browns today. You good with that? Cam Akers, potentially a trade there?
No. I mean, look, there's a reason why Kareem Hunt is not signed yet. He's not going to create a lot of explosive plays. He's familiar with last year's version of the offense, but they redid the playbook, you know, for Deshaun Watson this season. So it'd be a learning curve for Hunt coming in again. I don't think he's going to be an upgrade over the things that they have in house right now.
We got doubles in San Francisco Thursday Night Football. Managing editor Adam Burke wrote about it over at VSiN.com. We'll talk about it coming back. It is Sharp Money, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Okay, are you a pro yet? And if not, what are you waiting for? Become a VSiN Pro today. Get a daily email recapping all the best bets from our show hosts and guests. You also get unlimited access to our VSiN.com/picks page, which is important because you can sort by sport, matchup, event date, and more. You can check out the top VSiN experts leaderboard to view the betting records, profit, ROI. It's all there. 24/7 video access. You can sign up today for just $19 for your first month over at vsin.com/subscribe. Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson, I'm Patrick Maher. It's Berkey Tuesday. Adam Burke, VSIN managing editor. He does a ton for us. He's one of the best in the biz. And you wrote about it. We'll get to Thursday night with doubles up in San Francisco. But let's talk about the overs cashing this week. A rash of unders week one. And then we had 13 of 16 cash to the over with the split last night. I'm just taking a look at the board, and I don't even see a 50 hung as far as a total in week three. Let's kind of discuss, were you surprised by the rash of overs in week two, and what's the adjustment here, Adam?
Well, we do have one. We got a 54.
Oh, excuse me,
in
Minnesota.
And that Chargers and Vikings game, which honestly, like, tell your loved ones that, you know, you're a big fan of them. Call them. Tell them you love them, because something weird's going to happen in that game that probably creates a black hole that just swallows all of us in that Chargers-Vikings game. It's going to end on the last possession in some ridiculous, crazy fashion. But, yeah, I mean, look, you know, I think it makes sense, right? I mean, you know, week one of the NFL is basically a preseason week at this point in time because nobody plays in the preseason. So it takes a lot of time for these offenses to kind of get going, get on the same page, get their timing down. And, you know, they did wind up making some adjustments here, you know, from week one to week two. And maybe that's why some more points were scored. Also, you know, we saw some defensive scores and things of that sort. I think this week it probably balances out a little bit. You know, I wouldn't expect it to be another huge week for overs. But, again, offenses are kind of figuring out what works and what doesn't. And we just have to treat that week one of the NFL season like it's just preseason week four going into, you know, any future seasons that we have, unless the coaches are willing to change their minds and actually get these guys some meaningful reps.
Adam, the Jets are a 3-point home dog against the Patriots Sunday. How much of a downgrade have you given the Jets from a power ranking standpoint with the loss of Aaron Rodgers?
I don't power rate the NFL, so I don't have like an exact number on that. But, you know, you kind of think about it. And look, there was a reason to have some measure of optimism about Zach Wilson going, well, you know what? He's been in the same locker room with Aaron Rodgers. Like, he's going to have learned something, picked up on something. based on his performance, he did not. And maybe Dallas's defense is just that good, and it's certainly a possibility. But, yeah, I mean, it has to be a pretty significant downgrade. That being said, I mean, kind of like the situation we have with Cleveland right now that we talked about in the previous segment, like the Jets have a legitimately good defense. So they're really not out of any game, and a lot of their lines will probably be fairly close as we go throughout the season here, even though Wilson is such a substantial downgrade.
Adam, I mentioned doubles on Thursday. Let's discuss it. If you want to take a step back and talk about the Giants' comeback win, which saved a ton of people and contestants in Survivor, of course, San Francisco, you see the number, 10, a total of 45. You also, over at VSiN.com, you've got a bunch of tremendous statistics for this very scenario with doubles and 49ers laying it hosting the Giants.
Yeah, so writing that article on Sunday night, I tapped into something called the Killer Sports Database that's out there. And over the last 34 Thursday night football games with a spread of at least minus 10, the favorite 23-10-1 against the spread, 31-3 straight up for what it's worth. So it has been a situation where on the short week, the big favorites, the better team, ultimately ends up being the better team more often than not. That being said, if you look at it over the last few years, it's only happened 10 times since the 2018 season, 7-3 ATS. So still a good number for the favorites, but you know, not the same sample size as what I cited previously. That said, I mean, look, you know, the 49ers defense was out there for 78 plays in that game against the Rams last week. So they were out there quite a bit. The short turn, you know, maybe not the greatest thing for that defense. So I think that the Giants maybe have a chance to keep this thing close. You know, Brian Daboll saying Saquon Barkley may play. I don't believe that at all. I don't think he's going to. Maybe a bit of gamesmanship there. But it is a big number on a short week. So I was surprised to see that the favorites have done so well. I just don't know if this is a spot where I'd be willing to lay it with San Francisco.
Earlier today, we talked about the Bengals being a potential good bet to win the AFC North at plus 475 despite the 0-2 start and Baltimore's 2-0 start. They have the Rams on Monday night. What's your assessment of this team, where they're going? Obviously, the health of Joe Burrow a concern right now. How do you kind of gauge Cincinnati in a very competitive division?
Yeah, I think it's tricky with Cincinnati because, I mean, Joe Burrow means so much. I mean, the drop-off between Joe Burrow and Jake Browning is significant, a touchdown at least, if not more. Although, you know, we haven't seen this line fully go that far because there is the chance that Burrow still plays. But even when Burrow's been out there, the offenses look very disjointed. You know, missing those reps in the preseason has definitely had a negative impact, even with all the, you know, explosive wide receivers that he has. But the Bengals don't really have much of a running game. I think offense in the offensive line, they're okay. Defensively, they're okay. You know, Burrow is a guy who covers up a lot of things for them by being the caliber of quarterback that he is. I think there are a lot of concerns here, and I understand where you're coming from a price standpoint with Cincinnati, but if this is a lingering issue for Burrow, who basically did nothing for 4.5 weeks after the injury happened, what does that mean on a week-to-week basis? You know, he has not shown any propensity to get out and run. Under 10.5 rushing yards was an easy prop to cash last weekend. If he's not going to show any ability to do that, to move around, to move pockets, he could just be a sitting duck back there, and that's going to make things really difficult for the Bengals. It's kind of a bummer to say, being that it's just, you know, the end of week two. But at this point in time, it feels like the Ravens are pretty much destined to win this division now at this point.
The Kentucky Bengals. Berkey is down. Okay, so you wrote about the Bills at the Commanders. Let's put the Bills to the side, and I want to ask your opinion about the Commanders. As you note in your write-up, Adam Burke, it's not necessarily two great opponents. Of course, they come back and beat Arizona at home, and then they have a huge comeback on the road against Denver. Denver with the answered prayer late with the Hail Mary, miss out on the 2-point. But let's talk about the Commanders. They did get Chase Young back. He actually played well in week two. But we have to start with the quarterback. Are you impressed with Howell? I thought Howell, frankly, against Denver was great. What was your take?
I think it's like any young quarterback who's not, you know, a premier guy that comes out in the top five or the top 10, something like that. There will be good things and there will be bad things. And I think he's shown a lot of composure in the first 2 weeks. I mean, he got his bell rung in that first game against Arizona and then winds up coming back out, throwing a touchdown pass later in the drive. You know, showed a lot of moxie, not really being worried about the big deficit that they had against the Broncos, which, by the way, knocked out one of my survivors on the Circa. But you know, at the same time, we've seen a lot of bad things. We've seen him take 10 sacks already through two games. So it's just kind of the maturation process that a non-elite, you know, rookie, not rookie, but second-year guy has to go through. And I think it will continue to be this, some good and some bad. And it's been tough because you know, you don't have a Terry McLaurin at full strength. That's a guy who's a really big safety net to somebody like Howell. So I think you could say you've been impressed, but at the same time, I think it's perfectly fair to question the sustainability going forward of what he's done here so far, and if he can consistently be better than he is worse throughout the course of a game.
Just to follow up, does that number settling in at 6.5 feel right to you? Most shops open 6. Now the Bills up to 6.5 in D.C.?
Yeah, I don't think it's a bad number. I mean, at this point, I would kind of lean a little bit towards the Washington side of things. I wouldn't love taking it by any means, and I think Buffalo will be very popular in teasers to basically just have to win the game. I think it's a pretty reasonable number at this point in time, especially because we've seen two very different performances from Buffalo. I mean, they looked awful against the Jets. Josh Allen looked terrible. And then they just marched it up and down the field on the Raiders. So I don't know what we're going to get out of them here in this game. And the Commanders do have, all things considered, a pretty good defense, especially with the game changer back in Chase Young.
You mentioned Chase Young coming back. He had 1.5 sacks for Washington against Denver. We'll see. Patrick, he had a couple more he would have had, but he was near the pile. He just wasn't there in time.
ring around the room. But Payne and Allen inside?
Yeah.
Is there a better duo in the NFL? I ask you two. Those, to me, those are the two most dominant inside.
I don't disagree with you there, but I would also throw Sweat into the equation. I think he does a tremendous job for them. I don't think he gets enough credit for what he does as well.
Yeah, and look, I mean, I think that, you know, the biggest thing in the NFL that not enough people talk about, everyone wants to talk about the fantasy football players, as I call them, the quarterbacks, the running backs, the wide receivers. You've got to win the game in the trenches. That's where you have to win in the NFL still. And I know you've got, you know, different offensive schemes and all that kind of thing. If the Commanders are consistently able to create a lot of pressure, create negative plays, get the opposition to third and long, stuff like that, even if Howell is not great, and he probably won't be, this team is still going to have the chance to win a lot of ball games. And that's really all you can ask for, is put yourself in a position to have the chance to win on a weekly basis when you're not an elite team. And so far, Washington's done that twice, and they've come out on top twice. So is it sustainable? I don't know, but that defensive line is definitely elite.
Okay, managing editor, of course, Adam Berg. I love this. Hug your loved ones because, again, black hole in the cosmos, and we all get sucked into it talking about the Chargers and Vikings. I know you said it on the show, but that's part of the write-up over at VSiN.com. When we return, more with Berkey on the NFL and his power ratings college football-wise as well. Sharp money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Okay, I believe this is the brainchild of Bill AD. We've got a little subscription contest going on between the shows here at VSiN, and we need here at Sharp Money your help to win. At stake is a $1,000 voucher at Circus Sportsbooks to be used on Super Bowl futures tickets. To sweeten the deal for you, you're going to save right now 10% when you sign up for a new VSiN Pro annual subscription when you use the code SHARP. That helps us out with the contest as well. Bragging rights and a juicy futures ticket on the line. It's time to start betting smarter and help us do the same. Visit vsin.com/subscribe to sign up for a new VSiN Pro annual subscription. Save 10% with the promo code SHARP. That's vsin.com/sharp. Speaking of VSiN and vsin.com, managing editor, of course, Adam Burke joins us at the D. Appreciate Berkey Tuesdays as always. So I'm sure you saw this with your wife's connection in Georgia and South Carolina. Of course, Shane Beamer was doing laps around. Well, he ran through the hedges, Berkey, and then he was doing laps around Sanford Stadium at the half because they were, quote, beating up Georgia. And then Georgia promptly came out and whooped that ass in the second half. Okay. You have a great write-up with your power ratings over at VSiN.com, and you talk about the transfer and NIL variance week to week. We can get to the power ratings, but let's start with Georgia. Kind of a tale of two halves, although they didn't really have possession in the first half of the ball. I digress. What do you take away from the Bulldogs' win against South Carolina?
Well, look, I mean, I think talent kind of trumps everything, right? You can just flip that switch whenever you want to, and that's what Georgia did in that game, particularly in the second half, where South Carolina's a good team. They're not a great team. They don't have a lot of dudes. Georgia's got a lot of dudes. Dudes ultimately end up winning a lot of college football games, and that's what happened with Georgia in that one. But I think the big takeaway to me, quite frankly, is I don't know that there's an elite team in college football this season. I mean, Michigan has underperformed relative to market expectations. Maybe they're just holding a lot back. That could be a possibility. They're not letting Blake Corum get hit a whole lot. Maybe they are an elite team. Georgia doesn't seem to be elite. Alabama is clearly not elite. I don't know that Ohio State is elite. Maybe we'll find that out this week against Notre Dame. Florida State should have lost to Boston College. I mean, Boston College badly outgained them for the game, also from a yards per play standpoint. It just, I don't know that there's an elite team in college football this year, and I think Georgia really struggling through that half against South Carolina, the first real team that they've played, I think kind of illustrates that they've got some questions and some concerns on the offensive side.
And Patrick, I would agree with that. You look around college football right now, there's no team that stands out. Every team that you point to on one end or one side of the ball, you can point to a deficiency. You know, Michigan's a team that probably should not have been 7-6 in the second quarter against Bowling Green. Three turnovers by McCarthy. Texas was tied at 10 late in the third quarter against Wyoming. Adam, when you look at this matchup between Ohio State and Notre Dame on Saturday, Buckeyes a 3-3.5-point favorite, depending on where you get the line. Any particular strong leans one way or the other in this matchup?
No, I mean, based on what happened with Nick Chubb and the Browns last night, I just assume Ohio State's going to lose because that's just what happens to the state of Ohio. And you know, Cleveland has adopted the Buckeyes as kind of their own team 2 hours away down I-71. But in all seriousness, I mean, look, you got to answer questions about both of these teams here. I mean, Sam Hartman has played extremely well. NC State, maybe not very good. Sam Hartman hasn't faced a good defense. And the one thing about Ohio State, while they played a very weak schedule to this point, they have been completely dominant on defense. And all you can do, play the teams that are in front of you, right? That's all you can do is play whoever's on your schedule. And if you're going to play a bunch of patsies, you better dominate them. Ohio State has dominated defensively. On offense, up until the Western Kentucky game, didn't look all that great. But Kyle McCord looked really good for, you know, the time that he was out there taking things seriously. They've got 9 different running backs they can use. So this will be a good test, I think, for both of these teams. I'm right on the number at 3.5. I know, obviously, there's been a big adjustment from where it was over the summer, where it was up over a touchdown. I would potentially lean towards Ohio State, but I will not have a bet in this game, and we'll just root for the Buckeyes to hopefully take care of business in South Bend.
Adam, coming up on Friday, you've seen a little bit of a dip. Let's go Big Ten, stay there. Dip in the number, Wisconsin at Purdue. Most shops open 7 here. DraftKings open 7. They're down to 6 with Whiskey laying it on the road at Purdue. Do you agree with that number coming down a little bit at Purdue?
I have the number 7 in this game for Wisconsin, and I'm actually pretty happy that I was right on the opener because Wisconsin was a team that I had very, very high hopes for coming into the season. My season win total projection for them was 9.99 wins. That was a full win almost over the market. I thought this team was going to be really, really good. And to this point, they have not been. I mean, they didn't play well against Washington State, didn't play well against Georgia Southern. They covered, but they damn sure shouldn't have. Wisconsin just doesn't look the part yet. And Tanner Mordecai, I don't know if it's trying to get assimilated into Phil Longo's offense or what. This doesn't look like the same physical brand of football that we've seen from Wisconsin in the past. Maybe it's just a transitional year for them there in Madison, but I can understand why this line's coming down. At the same time, it's not like Purdue's looked any good. So, I don't know. I mean, I think under a touchdown, Wisconsin is kind of worth a look for me, but they are a tough team to trust based on what their profile looks like so far.
Adam, the Big Ten, good matchup in state college between Iowa and Penn State. The number 24 Hawkeyes catching 14.5 and a total of 40.5 in this game. I was a little bit surprised by this number. Where do you come out on this game?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's easy to be surprised with this number just because of what Iowa is able to do defensively on a week-to-week basis. And for Penn State, I mean, yeah, they really haven't looked the part either. They were not super impressive against what I think is a, you know, pretty lackluster Illinois team last week. So, I mean, look, I think that, you know, for Penn State, there are a lot of things to really like about this team that I don't think they've fully shown yet. Maybe they haven't taken the complete playbook out for Drew Aller. They haven't really used their running game as effectively as I would have expected them to. My line here is 16 in this game, but at the same time, Iowa is very good defensively. They have a knack for playing low-scoring games. They have a knack for forcing turnovers. It's not just a random occurrence. It's a designated skill that they have defensively. they probably do keep it close, but you know, I still think that Penn State is a team that's much better than they've played here so far, and I'm kind of trying to hold to that with my ratings that I have for them.
Okay, my favorite write-up weekly for you would be the college football ratings and your adjustments. So let's talk about one, and your biggest mover. I want you to explain to the audience why such an adjustment on Arizona State. It's a crazy situation, and speaking of, it's not a great week for them, as Arizona State is going to be hosting your boy Caleb in USC. USC's laying 35, Adam. Let's start with the adjustment on Arizona State.
Yeah, and even with my huge adjustment on the Sun Devils, I only have this line at 30, but there's absolutely no chance that I would play the Sun Devils in this game. So I had to make an adjustment because, frankly, they've played really badly. They have not played even close to the low expectations that I had for them. But the big thing here for Arizona State this week is that Jalen Rashada, who was their starting quarterback, true freshman, he's out 4 to 6 weeks. Both of the guys who were in line to replace him, Trenton Bourget and then also Drew Pine, got hurt last week. So Arizona State winds up finishing that game with their fourth-string quarterback. And an injury in a vacuum, even in college football, sometimes you can overcome that. But it's cluster injuries that become a big issue when you lose multiple offensive linemen, multiple defensive linemen, whatever the case may be. In their case, they're down to their fourth-string quarterback. So I made a 12-point adjustment for Arizona State, and apparently that still wasn't enough.
It just really is going to depend on how well and engaged USC is in the second half of this game. They're going to be able to really name their shot in this one. Adam, I want to ask you quickly about one more top 25 matchup taking place this weekend, and that's Ole Miss and Alabama. Did you agree with the Alabama decision to go back to Jalen Milroe, or did you disagree with the switch to begin with?
I mean, I disagree with the switch to begin with, and I think maybe, and I'm not a conspiracy theorist here, but I think maybe Milroe could have been suspended and or nursing an injury in that game against South Florida because they were laying 30 on the road. It's like, you're Alabama, you should win that game. You could put Nick Saban at quarterback and you're going to win that game. But I think that for Milroe, maybe it was a situation where they were kind of worried about his health, something like that, because now Saban's like, well, he's earned the right to be the starting quarterback or whatever it was that he said. It's like, yeah, he by default would have earned the right if you watched what we saw last week. I think going back to Milroe is the right idea. I'm really interested in this game because Ole Miss has had a couple of lucky covers here, but Jackson Dart's become a true dual-threat quarterback for them. My line is right in line with the market at 6.5-7, but, man, Alabama just feels different, just looks different. The talent at wide receiver is not the same. They got beat on a bunch of deep balls by Quinn Ewers. Ole Miss may take the top off of this defense. This is one of the most interesting games, I think, of the week. Does it have national championship implications? I don't think so. But I think it's a really intriguing game to kind of see the trajectory of both teams for the rest of the year.
Okay, putting you on the spot a little bit, if we opened it up again, Florida State LSU, neutral, what would Berkey make the number?
I'd make it Florida State minus 1.5 in a neutral setting, which is interesting because this line here today or this week is Florida State minus 1.5 against Clemson. So, you know, you add a little bit of home field there in Death Valley. But, I mean, Florida State, dominant second half against LSU, blew away Southern Miss when I took the Golden Eagles. And as I said, they should have lost last week to Boston College. So I don't know exactly what they are.
That's the variance you discussed in your article, which I think you aptly put it. Okay, we continue here on Sharp Money. I hope Berkey's sticking around. Managing editor over at VSiN.com. Make sure you go check out the baseball podcast as well. The write-up on the NFL and, of course, college football is all ready to read. We're coming back. Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Can we get Berkey a beer at the D? Hello. We're back with another week of football, and DraftKings Sportsbook is keeping, laugh, Berkey, keeping us in on the NFL action with great offers every single day. New customers can bet $5, get $200 instantly in bonus bets. You throw five down, you get $200. Instant winner for you. Football's more fun when you're in on the action, so download the DraftKings app now and use the code SHARP. It's that simple. New customers, $5, get $200 instantly. Only at DraftKings, the crown is yours. And here's what I mean by getting Berkey a beer. Like, you've done your job for the day. you come to hang out with us. You've written, you're a managing editor over at VSiN.com. You've done the baseball pod. I expect you now with our new venue to be milking a beer next Tuesday throughout the segments. Your thoughts?
My thoughts are that I don't have the authority to make that call for myself, so I will not be doing it. Also, I'm not done for the day. I still got to write some more college football stuff, work on some NFL stuff too. But you know, to that point about getting a subscription over at VSiN.com, you mentioned you guys have that promo code SHARP. Takes 10% off an annual subscription. That makes it less than 60 cents per day to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. And I can tell you, and I have a little bit of a biased opinion, but I can tell you that we are doing a lot of good things over at the website, and I encourage everyone, check that out, and also use that promo code SHARP because I like you guys, and I hope you win.
Thank you. Let's walk through this a little bit for those that are reluctant or just signing up. What have been, as the managing editor, what have been the focused changes this football season? Like, what you've implemented and what you've noticed has kind of hit at VSiN.com for the subscribers?
Well, you know what? I think that kind of allowing our writers to do what they're passionate about and allow their creativity to shine. I mean, we did last year, we had a Best Bets file that included everybody all in one article. Now we have individual Best Bets files for each writer that does one. Jonathan Von Tobel's John Von Model has been an awesome addition to the site as he's kind of chronicling his journey through modeling the NFL for the first time. I have a piece called Player Perspectives where I talk to Mike Pritchard and Sean King about kind of getting that perspective from somebody who played in the NFL, knows what it's like to be in that locker room with teams that are facing adversity of varying kinds. I mean, the Browns with Nick Chubb, the Broncos are a mess. Other teams are a mess. Other teams are experiencing success quicker than they thought. So getting some thoughts from Pritch and Sean about that. But just, ramping up the content, giving something for everybody, different perspectives, power ratings, more analytics-driven stuff, more situational stuff. It's just a lot of things going on over there that are really big positives. And I'll also mention September 28th, our NHL betting guide comes out with our new NHL writer, Johnny Lazarus. October 5th, our NBA betting guide comes out with JVT and Zach Cohen. Also a live betting piece from Kelly Bidlin. And then October 23rd, we'll have a college basketball season preview guide out. So over the next 8 weeks, we're going to be very, very busy, and all of that is part of that annual subscription.
It's a ton of work, but I've been here, close to 5-6 years, and the website's never looked better. So I congratulate you and the team. It's VSiN.com. All right, True Serum time. On Saturday night, by the way, if you were watching Colorado State on Saturday night on the East Coast, that thing went past 2 a.m. But I asked the three of you, who were you pulling for? We could start wherever you want. Where were your rooting interests? Because the game obviously had a vibe. I'll start to my left and go across. Dustin Sweetelson, we start with you with Colorado hosting Colorado State this past Saturday.
I was rooting for my bet, which was one of my favorite plays of the day. Colorado State first half plus 13.5, I believe I got. That's what I cared about, Colorado getting off to a slow start. And then I was able, once that hit, to root for Colorado to win to keep this going because I want to fade them this week against Oregon.
We'll hear from Gundy talking about Dion. Amal, were you into that matchup on Saturday?
I was. I thought it was a great game as a casual fan to watch. I was rooting for CU. I just didn't like the comments by Jay Norvell. I didn't think it was necessary. And so it was just a great football game to watch.
The game itself was, I don't know, it just, you had so many. I mean, I don't know who Offset is, but Offset was there. Berkey, not necessarily our cup of tea when it comes to music. Who were you into the game? Did you have a side?
At the start, I was rooting for Colorado because, like Dustin, I wanted to go ahead and take Oregon this week. And I wish that number was lower because it probably would have been if Colorado, would have kept doing what they were doing. But as the game went along, even with the cheap shot on Hunter, I found myself rooting for Colorado State simply because they were clearly the better team for three quarters of that game, and it wasn't even close. And then they just let it slip away because Norvell got way too conservative, and coaches aren't aggressive enough, man. I mean, they had, a 4th-and-1, 4th-and-2 to basically win the game. They kick it away. They got exactly what they deserved in the end for the way that that game was coached. So, shame for the players. And by the way, Colorado State now going to Middle Tennessee this week is maybe the most brutal situational spot I've seen in a few years.
And if you're Norvell, you've got to have a feel for your team, and I think you all, the three of you, would agree. They were never stopping Colorado in overtime. You have to go for two there. You got to have a feel for your team, Bert.
I was shocked he didn't.
Yeah, I mean, go out, go out and win the game. Like, go win the game. Don't try not to lose the game. Go win the game. That's what all coaches should think.
Totally agree, and that really does come down to the head coach has to have the vibe of the team. His defense was done. Okay, we've got the top 10 cartoon crushes, which I know Berkey's into, but first, let's hear from Mike Gundy. He's talking about Deion and what he's done with the portal.
I don't know him, but here's what I like. He's going to do what he wants the way he wants to do it and he believes in it, and he don't care what anybody else thinks. Now, he may be making more from Burger King and Aflac and whoever else, and it might not matter, which is all the power to him. But from a distance, what I see is this is what he believes in, and this is what he did. And I'm guessing that they would have to practice against each other all the time because their roster numbers would be down. But it's worked out for him. Now, I haven't really seen them play much. I saw him play a little bit of TCU, but I haven't seen him play anymore. But the part I did see is that his son was making a lot of plays. He was making a really good player, making a lot of plays, and they're playing into his strengths. And I thought that was good. But it'll be great for our conference. But he certainly proved that you can get rid of your whole team and bring a new team in and play good.
That seemed passive aggressive. How long has it been since the I'm 40 rant, right? It feels like a while now.
It's got to be like 15 years.
Yeah. 2007.
I'm 40. Man, that's wild. Anything, fellas, before we get to the top 10 from Gundy's comments there on Deion?
I thought it was pretty vanilla.
See, you know what? I think a lot of it is Gundy wishes he could be like Deion. Gundy, you know, he used to really have a stamp on this Oklahoma State program, kind of did what he wanted to do, you know, had the rants with the media and all those kinds of things. He's had a couple of, you know, incidents and allegations and investigations and all of that. And then remember, I think it was a couple of years ago, his players kind of came out about, you know, maybe the way that he treats them, stuff like that. I think Gundy just kind of wishes that he had, you know, full autonomy within that program. And I don't know that he really does anymore. And then also being upset that Deion basically converted an entire program in an offseason, and Gundy's program is really going downhill quickly. They are not a very good team anymore. And I think that, you know, he was kind of lamenting that without directly saying it.
That's exactly what I read from it. He's got an irreverent personality as well, so you know there's some jealousy of what Deion's accomplishing. Big guy, you got 2 minutes. Let's go. Top 10 cartoon crushes.
Oh, I can finish way quicker than that. My top 10 cartoon crushes, and I have so to this list. Kim Possible came in at number 10 from the Disney Channel before a few of your generations. Helen Parr / Elastic Girl from The Incredibles was 9. I've never actually watched either of these movies. Why don't you Google her, Patrick, while I'm going over here? Elastic Girl. Okay. Just Google it. Trust me. It's one of the hottest cartoons of all time. A cartoon from our generation, Bebe's Kids, Jamaica, absolute dime piece. Jasmine from Aladdin, come on, she's a princess. Number 6 was Lola Bunny, the first animal on our list. It's a little bit weird, but I do have feelings for her. April O'Neil from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was special at 5, which brings us to 4. Daphne from Scooby-Doo, good God, was she hot. Number 3, Veronica Lodge from the Archie comics, perfection. Number 2, Jessica Rabbit, who I think everyone assumed I would have at number 1. But the truth is, number 1 to me has a combination of cute and sexy that can't be replicated, and that is Brittany from the Chipmunks. She was the leader of the Chipettes. She had a golden voice, and she was absolutely adorable.
I'll just say this. Helen Parr, Elastigirl, is sitting on something, big guy. My goodness, what is going on
there?
She's got
a tire swing down there.
Berkey, your take on the crushes. Let's go.
I have nothing to add to that conversation. Nothing.
Helen Parr is sitting on something. Good job, big guy. He makes me want to Google search. And I have plenty of time as the show is ending. Amal Shah, we will see you Thursday. Hey, Berkey, thank you for driving all the way down to the D. Again, managing editor over at VSiN.com. Go check out the work. It's great. Big guy, great job. We'll see you tomorrow right here on Sharp Money. It's VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.